You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. Now the largest new media platform on the web. And your number one source for after-show entertainment.
Very good, Dean Johnson.
From the AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and Bing.com, and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is AfterBuzz TV's The Newsroom After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's The Newsroom After Show.
Hello, everyone. Bing is for doing, and we are here doing another fabulous after show for The Newsroom. We are in Season 2, Episode 4, Unintended Consequences. I am your host, Kelly, and with me, to my right...
Hi, guys. This is Kristen Carroll. And across the way, the lovely...
Hello, I'm Sarah Mendoza.
And I'm John Comerford.
The birthday boy.
Yes, the birthday boy. Very happy birthday, John. We couldn't help it.
Thank you.
And we have a very special guest with us in studio tonight. Woo-hoo. You guys know her as Tess, the lovely Margaret Judson. Say hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me, you guys.
Of course.
And also, I expect some cake.
It's there. We have it ready for you.
Okay, good. Thank you.
So tonight's episode was pretty intense.
Yeah.
No, not at all. Not for you. Nah. Kind of light and fluffy like normal.
They didn't do a very good job when they were walking around and the guns were firing. No. I wasn't intense at all.
Children being killed.
Yeah, I know.
That's
really
not,
yeah. Oh,
not
my
a big
gosh.
Deal for John.
No. My birthday. It happens every birthday.
No, it was a great episode, and I want to start off with, let's talk about Shelley and her interview with Will, Shelley Wexler from Occupy Wall Street. Neil brings her in as Mackenzie had promised him if he gets someone in, she gets airtime to talk about the whole Occupy Wall Street. And of course, Will being Will, he totally
cleans her clock, has her for lunch. What else?
Here comes dinner, I believe.
There you go.
Yes. Myrtle, yeah. She walked out. I believe they said myrtleized her.
Yeah, myrtleized her. I think that's what Maggie says, yeah.
I think that's pretty accurate, though.
Yeah.
There's a lot of murdering going on today.
He was absolutely smug. He was himself. Yeah. But I don't think his questions were really that harsh.
No, and the other thing is, I mean, it's not like they haven't seen Will and how he operates, how he prosecutes somebody. How do you not go prepared to that?
Exactly.
And, you know, think it's going to be a fluff piece.
And I think the questions were legitimate. It's the way in which Will says things, though, that's so
that
cutting.
Smugness?
Yeah, it's more than smug, though. It's
condescending.
Condescending, and mm-hmm. Yeah.
I really liked it, though. I'm not sure I'm quite fond of Shelley, so I didn't mind him taking her down a notch.
Okay. Nice.
Personally.
All right.
I actually didn't mind it that much either. I think with someone that's really, if you're going to protest and you're going to stand up for something, you should know what you're standing up for and what you're protesting. And I get it.
That I do
they,
too.
That they have so many things they want to speak against,
right.
But there should still be a clear agenda of what to talk about. You
Absolutely.
Can't confuse people.
But her argument was just as great. Look, why you went after me rather than what the story really is, because really he just scored points with her. It had nothing to do with news.
But she still couldn't even come back and tell him what the story was.
I don't disagree with that at all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah.
I'm the one that said that she should have been prepared. It's not like she didn't know how it was going to go.
Right.
In the bigger scheme of things, Will's helping her out. It's tough love, but he's pointing out to her that, hey, you really need to have a clear mission here, and you need to follow through and have actionable things that you're doing.
Which is what Neil told her from the very beginning.
Right. Good old Neil.
Yeah. That they should have somewhat of a plan to educate people on what it is that they should be, you know, protesting or to get. If you want more people to get involved, what are you talking about?
Mm-hmm. And talk about learning your lesson the hard way. She should have listened back then, but you know, she really didn't maybe take it too seriously coming from Neil. And now that she's on air with Will, you know, she's being reamed by him. And if she just had maybe kind of listened to Neil before, she maybe would not be in that position.
Or just as simple as preparing, like John said, just doing, especially being a college professor. And I was a little bit surprised at that. I didn't remember. Did we already know that? Or did we just find that out this episode? I guess that was something that I didn't know if we knew before. But it's also one of those things, if you keep yelling out, I teach college, who are you trying to who are you convincing? Me or you? Like, how many times do you have to
say?
And
I like that Sloan called her out on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Rubes.
I felt bad a little bit that everybody was so rude to her. But at the same time, she didn't want to take the constructive criticism at all. Like, I get it, Will went a little bit overboard. But at the same time, take the smugness out of it, but listen to the questions he was asking you. You couldn't answer them. Mm-hmm. So take a step back for a second and listen. And taking criticism is the hardest thing for anyone to do.
Yeah, but so I still think somebody should have taken him to task for it. Actually, he didn't do his homework either, because he just went after her rather than, is there a story here? Is there any legitimacy to any of their concerns? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Rather than that, he just wanted to take her to task.
Yeah. Well, but wasn't that supposed to be Neil's job, though?
It is, but he's on air.
No, but I mean to give him the information and to educate him on that. So either he did and he didn't care. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but he's on air. He's at the end of the day, he's responsible for what he puts out there. I'm just saying he had an opportunity to enlighten the public on something if there was an illegitimacy. Mm-hmm.
Right.
But it just goes to show that he just really doesn't care.
He just didn't take it seriously at all.
And neither did Mackenzie, and he's really close to Mackenzie. So I think if she didn't care and didn't really – the fact that when she even came in there and she goes, here comes dinner, she still doesn't take this whole thing seriously. Right. Well, so if she doesn't and will trust him and what she's giving him –
But
that doesn't care either.
Weren't they just, you know, parroting, or at least I should say, reflecting how the news media felt about Occupy Wall Street anyway? Their smugness about it, and they just threw them aside too. They didn't, they didn't care.
Yeah.
They just thought they were a joke.
It was just a bad interview all the way around.
But basically, they were right about each other.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Period.
Do it. Yeah. Pen down.
And one thing that kind of came out of it was extra added information. I mean, Shelley was also had some extra information for Neil and Jerry, possibly, about this whole Genoa thing.
You know, only Sorkin gets away with being how convenient.
I know.
Something to fall in our lap. Oh, hey, Neil.
But, I know, it was a perfect way to
It. It's like, okay, it works. You just kind of go, okay, we'll go with that.
It works. But, you know, it's one of those things that you never, like, she hangs out in the park. You never know who you're going to meet. It could happen. It's not that far off, maybe. Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Okay. All right.
In the TV world, it's not far.
Right. She doesn't know this person's name. He has possible information about what's going on with the whole Genoa situation. He wrote a report. They want to find him. And Shelley is so upset about this whole interview. She's want to have anything to do with anybody at ACN, and I love that everybody tries to go talk to her, and they just continuously keep making it worse.
They all just keep digging.
Neil it's won't like, give up.
Well, important. No. And if Neil's going after her after she punched him in the stomach, some good stamina.
I mean, what else does he have? They need to get this piece.
I want to know if Dev Patel had a stand-in for that, if he actually had.
No, he loves to do his own stunts, and remember when he punched the computer screen when it was Rush Limbaugh talking on it? Yes. He was so frustrated with it. He got to do that. He was like so insistent that he would be able to do his own stunt. So they have stunt people come in and teach him how to do it and not hurt himself. Uh-huh. But, you know, it's him doing it. Yeah.
How many takes did it take? How many times did he have to get punched
in
the stomach?
One? Oh, well, I wasn't in that scene because that was in a hallway. Uh-huh. But I know that, I mean, you guys are talking about the Occupy Wall Street.
Sure, yeah.
You know, storyline, and it's hard for me to separate myself from him because I love all the actors who are involved in, like, Aya Cash is so fun. So I know that they had a really good time shooting that, Aya and Deb.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. That had to be, but that was funny. She looked like she really got him good.
I love that we're getting the inside scoop from you.
Yeah.
From like what's
and
happening
it's
behind
cool
the scenes.
To like talk to you guys who haven't had that same experience and hear how you guys feel about it and like kind of what that. You know, how you guys receive that different stuff. That's cool to me.
So what did you think about that storyline in particular, about the interview between Shelley and Will? Like, what side are you on in that sense?
So that's the thing about that storyline. Like, it's hard for me to separate myself. I mean, I understand what you guys are saying, that, you know. And what did you say about the about only Aaron Sorkin would get away with that?
Oh, yeah, the idea that it was so convenient to have them saying, gosh, we just need something to fall in our lap, and then she comes walking by.
Totally. And in the pilot, you know, Jim has those sources, those two sources that coincidentally, and I know Aaron, I was in the writer's room at that point when we were talking about it, and he always talks about, like, flying in the teeth of it. So, you know, he knew he wanted to have that set up, and Jim has a line so as to fly in the teeth of it about, I'm never this lucky. But, you know. Yeah. So, yeah, I do think he sometimes gets away with it. But I do want to say that I feel like, you know, we were talking about Breaking Bad earlier. Yeah. I absolutely love that show. And I feel like a lot of times, especially from the critics, the newsroom gets some, you know, a little bit of slack from the critics because it feels so real and it feels like, you know, something that we can see on TV all the time and news media is something that the public is pretty involved in and as opposed to, you know, Breaking Bad where meth producing and meth dealing is kind of a more like
potential subject.
Wait, so you're not
that's my
you're
life,
not around meth dealers?
I know, it's weird. It seems like I would be. But I think that, you know, there are plenty of times in Breaking Bad and other shows. I don't mean to call it Breaking Bad. I absolutely love that show, and I think they do an amazing job. Vince Gilligan is incredible. But I think, you know, there are a lot of times where Jesse suddenly knows somebody who Walt needs to get in touch with. Mm-hmm. You know, there. I think that's a product of drama and fictional television.
Makes
too.
It easier.
Yeah.
So got to speed up the story a little bit. Somebody has to know somebody.
Yeah, so right. We got to get to it.
Sometimes it's a little too obvious. Sometimes it works, but you know.
Well, this one I was like, okay.
You were willing to go along with
that. Well, no, that's what I'm saying. My point is that I think if you handle your dialogue as well as he does, you just go with it just because it's fun. I mean,
exactly. I completely
even though
agree.
Even though it feels real and everything, I think Sorkin always writes, he writes idealized, it's romantic, it's, he doesn't write. He writes surreal, not surreal. It's not even, it's real, but nobody talks like that.
Right.
So you go with that because that's what he does.
I really appreciate you saying that because I feel like a lot of people get hung up in, I think that it's a trend in television for things to be really real. And that's great.
Yeah.
And I love to watch shows like that. But also, if you're watching The Newsroom, you have to get in that kind of mode of, I'm watching this kind of romanticized ideal of what a newsroom would be, as opposed to getting really, you know, fixated on how real the specific details are.
You know, and there's room for that on the TV, because everybody likes the anti-hero, Breaking Bad, for instance. The Sopranos was with it. And so, but that's not what Sorkin does. He doesn't do that.
Right.
He writes a different thing. I mean, I just think there's room for all kinds of it. I don't know why it has to be one. Oh, we're only doing this now? No, why?
Yeah, right. Why? I mean, thank you for saying that. I completely agree.
And I recently have just started watching, like, The West Wing all the way from the beginning, and I'm, like, on season 6, and just to be able to compare the two with the dialogue, it's the same. There's the way that he writes in that way. It just makes everything flow. And the way that he romanticizes, at least for me, because I'm not, like, super big on politics and all of that, but I understand more of the way that he talks about it, and it doesn't seem so boring, if that makes sense. Like, kind of reintroducing these news stories that I remember from a couple years ago, but listening to them in a different way, it kind of makes it more interesting on a different level, which I like, because it is a television show. It's not a reality show.
Yeah.
So it makes it more fun to watch that way.
It's interesting, because often what Sorkin will do is he'll give you both sides of the arguments much deeper than you'd get on an actual, real news cycle, because they'll just give you the little tidbit, but he actually will give you the argument.
Yeah, and I love to talk about that because I was I was a consultant before I was an actor on the show, and I was in the writer's room between when we shot the pilot and when we shot the rest of the season for season 1. And Aaron was so committed to always having both sides of the argument.
Always.
And he always wanted it. That's kind of how he works. A lot of the writers in his room, he writes every word of dialogue, but a lot of the writers in the room serve as researchers, and he always wants to have both sides of the argument. He wants like a pro con
and
memo.
He wants them to be as full-throated advocacy from both sides as he can.
Yeah, and I know that he kind of gets a lot of slack from the critics about, like, only being one-sided, but I think
if you're
watching with a less critical eye, you know, you're actually seeing that he does see both sides of the argument, and that's what makes good drama. Is if you're just hitting somebody over the head with one thing, it's not as interesting as if you're getting both sides and there's an actual conflict and there's an actual, you know, obstacle for the characters to get over. There's something compelling about what both sides want and how they're going to kind of come to an agreement.
Yeah, and I think one of the best things about the show, and if you're watching it, you have to watch it and remind yourself that this is a drama. This is a scripted drama, and take it for what it is and appreciate it for that. Yeah. And then I think it will make a lot more sense once people stop trying to make it this, like, documentary about the news. Yeah, it's not that.
I love how Aaron says, you know, we're on after True Blood. Come on.
Now that is real. Wait a minute.
Wait, you're telling me Eric Northman isn't out there. I don't know what to do with the rest of my life.
Spoilers.
Shoot. Too funny.
And even if it, for me, even if it does seem one-sided at moments, that to me is interesting in itself and it elicits emotion from the viewers because the viewer might be on the same side and be going, yeah, 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 or they might be on the opposite side and being like, oh, hell no. Like, yeah, I cannot believe they just said that. So that's interesting to me that he's trying to evoke emotion, you know.
Totally. That's what makes the show so polarizing is that both sides are compelling and it gets something moving in anybody. You know, anybody who has an opinion about it is going to get worked up by either side.
Right.
And he always stays true to the character, at least, too, I feel like. Mm-hmm. So if somebody is one-sided, there's people in life who are one-sided. So I think that is a complete realistic take on something like that.
Yeah. Right.
And I think the characters and how much we relate to them or care about them is so important because going back to the instance that we were just talking about, how it flew into the teeth of it.
Yeah.
How
if there's like a storyline or if there's a piece of the story that doesn't seem to make sense, it's good for the writer to acknowledge that this maybe seems a little outlandish, but we're acknowledging it, so stick with us.
Exactly. Right. So that's why for me it was forgivable that Shelley would have that information because I'm like, heck yeah, okay, Deb, you're still doing okay. You've still got it.
Well, finally, Will comes in after swearing he's not going to apologize and everybody makes this whole situation worse. He comes in, he shows up in her classroom, and he has a nice conversation. I like the conversation that he had with her. I like the way that he went about it because he was still himself.
Yeah.
But he was just honest
about
it.
Wasn't on air, but definitely honest about it. But you know, it's kind of like what he did with last week with, help me out.
With Nina.
Thank you, Nina. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thing.
Okay.
He did
well,
a lot.
It's his mission
he
is civilized.
A lot with Nina. Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean that part. Just the conversation you had with Nina about being honest with her.
He did a lot.
Yeah, thank you very much.
You call it a conversation?
Yeah, well, Kendra, I won't call it anything because apparently they didn't do anything.
You know what I find funny? It's kind of like, for me, Will's kind of like the tooth fairy that just like appears out of nowhere and like... like at the randomest place,
and he's
like,
you money?
"I'm going to civilize you with his wand." Like,
yes,
he did knock her teeth out in the interview. So
that's true.
And who knows what he left for Nina after? Or
not. Oh gosh! Oh no! But he did admit that he had fun with her, and he did it on purpose, and he was having a crisis of confidence.
At the score, cheap points. But the part, the fact that he said the other was, I think, very
And I think that made her respect him more and kind of look at the situation in a different way.
At least enough to give the information.
True. And at least, and also to admit that she was terrible on it herself, that she didn't she took responsibility for her part in it as much as he did for his. And I thought that was a great conversation.
Right.
And on top of all that, then you got the well thing going on there. I think that you want to tug at that thread. That was full, very layered scene there.
Who do you think he was talking about with the well, Nina or Mackenzie?
Well.
I thought it was Nina.
Did
that
you?
Was my first inclination.
I thought it was Mackenzie.
Yeah, I don't think he thinks of Nina as a girlfriend.
Why he said, well, because it was a night. And then we don't know what happened afterwards.
Yeah.
You know what I was worried about? Since he wanted to audit the rest of her class, I was worried that would turn into a Nina situation, too.
I thought he was going to hook up
That's
with
That's how
Shelley.
He apologizes now to people.
Yeah.
Wow.
No.
Where is your mind?
I'm opposite of Kendra on this, okay? Like, I
all of a sudden, he's walking around making out with everybody. That's how he civilizes.
Seriously. He's just offending people so that he can apologize, you know.
So he's just hot for teacher?
You're talking about that E special, aren't you?
Oh, man. So they finally got the information. Mackenzie takes it in and takes it. They have this report. And it's scary to think they're getting closer and closer to really why they went with this story.
Yeah.
I mean, where do these reports come from? These people, you know, that they're still looking for the guy that did the tweets. They can't find him.
I don't really know who they got. They got, obviously, I forget what his name. What's the guy's name that they were looking for all day?
Deets. Something Deets.
Deets. Yes. Okay, because it goes with Beats. Rhymes with Beats.
Yeah. So Leon Deets.
Yes.
But, for me, the whole thing was in Sam's reaction to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So he writes that report, which allegedly describes Genoa. But then we don't know yet where he's getting his information.
Yeah, because he was
report.
Getting information from other people that were talking about this supposed U.S. military strike.
Right.
So it's still kind of a he said, she said. Like, it's not hard facts yet, really.
Yeah, you have one report. You have one person who was supposedly there and describes it, and then a Twitter account that you can't find the person.
So it's still all circumstantial. It's still not really like hardcore evidence.
But since there's multiple instances of what might be evidence, at least now, I think Charlie and Mackenzie want to continue investigating. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think they were about to really shut it down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right before that.
Yeah. Crazy.
Can I add an interesting story?
Yes, of course.
Story?
Yes.
No,
nice
absolutely.
I'm not sure when I can jump in, but
anytime.
So there's a consultant on our show. His name is Rick Kaplan, and he's actually the one who gave the storyline, this Operation Genoa storyline, to Aaron. And it's about his time at CNN.
With Tailwind,
it was called Operation Tailwind, and it was about the U.S. Army dropping chemical weapons in Laos in 1970s, and it premiered on CNN, and then there were, in retrospect, they found out that maybe these details in Tailwind, that's not necessarily what's going to happen in Newsroom, but in Tailwind, they found out that maybe these details weren't perfect or weren't right, and maybe they shouldn't have gone with the story. So, like, that's the debate. But I actually have this really bizarre connection to Rick Kaplan. So I went to University of Illinois for broadcast journalism, and Rick Kaplan also went to U of I, and he was the president of MSNBC, so he would always... he's been the president of a lot of networks, but particularly MSNBC, and he would always have U of I grads come to do an internship program. And the year before he left, I got hired as an intern on MSNBC, to his credit, because he always... Mm-hmm. On the coasts, they don't know U of I. But because of Rick Kaplan, he knew it was a good school. He went there as his alma mater, so he had them come in. I never met him, though, because he left MSNBC, but technically he got me my internship, which got me my job with Keith Olbermann, which got me in touch with Aaron Sorkin, which got me on the show, The Newsroom. And I never met Rick Kaplan until he showed up during the last day of the last episode that we were shooting, just to, like,
check in.
See.
What, so like,
yeah,
thank
see
you
what
so
it looked
much.
Like. And
wow.
I was, yeah. And I was finally, like, faced with the person who got me to where I was.
Wow.
And, like, thanked him for this, like, crazy journey that he started for me. I mean, I owe a lot of that to Aaron Sorkin, too. But he started it.
That's awesome.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Crazy. Yeah, yeah. Go Illini.
Those are the moments that you'll never forget.
Mm-hmm. Huh? Yeah.
And see, it just proves Aaron Sorkin's point. You never know who you know. See, there could be a connection that works.
See? Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, my gosh.
Cool.
All right, well, let's talk about Jim and the Romney bus. So Jim's kicked off this bus. Now they're at the Radisson, can't get a room. Well, can't get three rooms. They can get one room because now the campaign is not helping them out at all, not giving them information, just totally like stonewalling them with everything. So they have this fun little car ride because Jim loses the bus because apparently buses are fast now.
Again, another really convenient thing just to get them stuck together.
Yeah. I can picture Jim driving like a grandma, though. I don't know about you guys. Like a little slower.
Really?
Yeah, like he won't want to damage the car.
He was kind of slouched in the seat a little bit. He kind of looked like an old man driver. It was a little funny.
Okay.
Anyway, so
it's
they're
funny
there.
Because John Gallagher is like this rock star. Like that's like his thing. He's this like crazy guitar player, and he's like so fun. Probably not the most cautious person, but Jim plays Jim very well. Because I agree, that would definitely be Jim's character.
To
be very cautious.
It was really funny.
Yeah.
But one of the crazy things for me was watching Hallie take that call from Evan, her boss. So she takes a call on speaker in the car while on Bluetooth.
Well, Jim forces her to take it on speaker.
Yes, and everybody gets to hear how Evan totally disrespects and berates her in front of everyone. And it's horrible.
What did he say?
Huh? You don't remember? I know you remember.
I don't remember anything being wrong.
Horrible. Horrible.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe, even if they're not on speak, he should not. And then I was a little bit confused. Are they in a relationship or aren't they? Because Hallie never quite cleared that up in the hotel room because she said, you know, you've no business of my personal life or my professional life or, you know, both. And it looked like
maybe. Well, they're definitely messing around.
There has to be a little bit of a blurred line there because, one, she doesn't. If it's, I mean, I don't know. I don't know how bad people want to keep a job, but personally, I don't think I could handle anyone ever saying those things to me in any situation. I don't care what's going on. Mm-hmm. It's never okay to basically call somebody a hooker when you're mad at them and trying to reprimand them as a superior.
That was a nice way of saying it.
Yeah, I know.
You know, and it's, it was definitely worse the way that he said it to her. And the fact that she didn't stick up for herself bothered me. Mm-hmm. But then after that conversation that she was having with Jim, it made a little bit more sense. So she has to at least level with him once, or something has to be going on there for her to feel like it's okay for her to take that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that she had gone against it and reported it. That maybe she would be in trouble too because she had done something with him.
I don't know, they're not like a big paper or anything though, right? Like a website or something?
I found it even more disconcerting that even if, because it seemed like they did have a relationship outside that was professional, which made it even worse to me.
Well, yeah, no, it definitely makes it worse, but
the fact that she wouldn't say anything, wait a minute, you know this guy and you
But that's why I think she wouldn't say anything. Mm-hmm. But because because she obviously feels bad about the relationship she's having with him because she's constantly I went to Vassar. Yeah. I'm smarter than you. I have more experience than you.
And again, if you have to convince somebody, who are you trying to convince?
Exactly. So she has to be doing something she's not, that she kind of feels bad about. Mm-hmm. And I think that might be part of it.
I personally thought that she admires this guy, her supervisor for the company, you know, the newsroom that she works for. Mm-hmm. And with admiration, there might be a crush there. Maybe that guy knew that she had a crush and they're working closely together and something must have happened. Mm-hmm. But then after the fact, after she slept with him or whatever happened, now she feels the need to prove that she's not still there or not. She's not getting assigned to these cool stories just because she's sleeping with the news director or whatever he is.
Still doesn't give him the right to say what he said to her.
Oh, no.
I
agree, but she's probably just one of those girls stuck in an abusive relationship. It's like Maggie and Don, but abusive, like more abusive.
Yeah, well, the most telling, he absolutely had no right to say it, but of course, whatever he does. Right. The most telling part of the scene is that she didn't say anything.
Yes, absolutely. Because that tells you so much more about her character.
Especially because the other guys heard it.
Yeah.
Well, and especially about the way that she kind of handles herself with Jim.
Yeah.
And she's constantly yelling at him, constantly. Mm-hmm. They have that kind
of
fight.
She says, be superior. I'm going, but you've been superior with him the entire time you've known him.
Exactly. I
feel like she can't lash out at her supervisor, boyfriend, or whatever because it is her ass.
Well, sorry, I mean, it might go back to that whole thing that's who are you really mad at?
Mm. Yeah.
You know, it goes back to the other storyline. And I think that it kind of ties in with that same similar way of thinking.
It's projections. She can't do it to him, to her supervisor. She's going to do it to Jim.
Right.
And I wonder, too, since the other guys were in the car, and even though you should stand up for yourself, I wonder if she didn't want to make any more of a big deal and just let him say it and then hang up the phone, too. Mm. Kind of a why Maggie hit under that bed a while ago, or just let it go away and not make it a bigger deal or anything like that.
Yeah, but also she was.
I don't know.
Also, she was there in the car, and
she might have just been paralyzed by how mortified she was feeling in that moment.
Mm-hmm. I mean, she could have like hung up on him, you know, done something.
Well, that's what I was going to say about the scene. The most telling part was that she didn't say anything, and then I wanted to just stay with that moment. I wanted to see what happens when because we cut away to a different storyline. I'm going, just hang there for a second, because that would have been amazingly awkward.
Yeah.
I wanted to just hang there for a second, let that sit there, and see how she dealt with it, what she said, if she tried to explain it or deflect it or whatever. I think that would have been very, very interesting.
But that's where I agree with you. It is interesting because it just shows that she's not as strong as she's been playing herself to be.
Right.
And, you know, girls who are in those kind of abusive relationships, they feel stuck And yes, they don't have a backbone.
I mean, it could even be as simple as, I mean, we are thinking so much more into it than it could really be.
It's
meta. It's, you know, when you're young and you're in a job that you really like and you're making, you know, basically no money, but you want to do this, you want this to be your career, you're going to take a lot of stuff from your bosses that you wouldn't normally take. And I don't know, working in entertainment, I mean, I've had, you know, crazy bosses that scream and yell up and down, you're stupid, you're this, how can you this and that, and totally degrading and all of that, but you suck it up and you take it, and that's just kind of the way the business goes, and that's your mentality, that's what you do, because they can always find somebody to do it for less money and or for free, and they can always replace you the way they make you feel. Especially in those entry-level type of jobs. And even when Charlie's talking about, you know, what is Jim doing down there, sometimes we pay people in coupons.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how they think about this position of reporting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So maybe that could be her. She really wants to keep her job. She wants to keep doing what she's doing. So she's taking this abuse because she feels that she has to.
Mm-hmm. Could be.
Which isn't a good thing either. But, and, you know, not to automatically go to she's sleeping with him. Maybe it's another thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
I got to...
I want to know what the viewers think.
Like, well, didn't he say they were effing on the phone? That's what he said, I thought.
No, yeah. He told her, like, that's what she should do for the money that he's paying her to be there to do nothing. Yeah. That was his comment, was that I'm paying you $500 a week plus expenses. And she's like, he said, I'm giving it to you.
Exactly.
Yeah, he was telling her, I'm giving it to you. And she says, no, you're paying it to me. And he's like, no, you're not doing anything for me. So I'm giving it to you unless you want to put on heels, come over and, you know, do me for an hour. Mm. Then I would be, that's what
For me, him saying that implied that is the relationship has gone there. And he's saying, I don't know.
Well, I would hope wouldn't be a go-to statement that just somebody would say to an employee. So maybe that just spit all over the place. Maybe that's why.
But we want to hear from you guys. What do you think? What do you guys think on Helly not saying anything? Do you think there's something more there? Do you think she's not standing up for yourselves? We love hearing from you guys. Mm-hmm. And I especially wanted to thank, we had more comments this week.
Yeah, it was really great. Yeah, so thank you for that.
We had another one on iTunes, Philly Tim 19. Thanks for the show. Thank you for watching. We also had a lot on YouTube. I like a lot of people chimed in because our other co-host, Kendra, didn't think that Will and Nina did it. And that was our question last week.
Oh, okay.
I was like, do you guys think they did it? And everybody was just, oh, they totally did it. Will hit that. That was one of my favorites.
Oh, nice.
Thank you. Poppy Exo, if I'm saying that correct. Mrs. Steinhauser, I'm glad she didn't fall off of her treadmill because we mentioned her last week.
Oh, nice.
And then glad that she also got her podcast fixed and she loves the show. And... Patrice Pinnell. I'm saying the last name right as well. I love Kendra's innocent smiley face.
Yeah.
She had some great comments about. A lot of people had a lot to chime in about Don and Sloan as well.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so thank you. Please keep them coming. Go to iTunes, download the podcast. It's free, and you can also go to YouTube and watch and leave comments as well. We really appreciate that. So, the hardcore story.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
I don't know. I don't know if I'm ready to talk about Maggie in Africa.
No.
It was tough for me to watch.
That was, I mean, what a note to end on.
I know.
Let's go to Sloan. Let's talk about Sloan.
I'll never let go, Kodak.
Sloan and her trauma of watching the Titanic for the first time. I thought that was a cute little thing to throw
in.
Lighten the episode a little bit. Mm-hmm. And also Elliot and Don and their confrontation with Charlie. Yeah. That's
Edward
always
Head.
Great. I mean, seriously, though, real quick, let's talk about that. What do you guys think about them actually saying the word about the ranch, like the name of the ranch? I mean, as if you were just a viewer watching the news and the anchor had said that, would you have been offended?
No, I remember that, you know, as the story was breaking and everything,
right.
I actually turned, I think it was my wife, and I was going, why are they, you know, dancing all around this? We all know what the word was. I mean, I understand that you want to be sensitive, but the way they were doing it wasn't really sensitive. It just seemed ridiculous that on a news show we couldn't be adults and talk about it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I just found that fascinating. And I remember at the time saying, what do we live? Are we all two? We can't discuss as adults what happens here?
I think especially with a cable news cycle, things can get really gratuitous really quickly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I could see that. And at the same time, I agree. I think that it's part of the story.
Yeah,
and it's not something to be offended about if like an anchor is reporting what happened.
And if you set the context and put the framework, I mean, you can easily explain it or express it, but you know, if you're going to go the other way out, which is the gratuitous way, and use it just to get people riled up, sure, you can do that too.
Yeah.
But I just thought that was crazy how everybody's just dancing around it, like, ah.
It almost makes it more awkward. Like, yeah. Just say, get over it.
Like, exactly.
Yeah. Just do it.
You know, I mean,
it draws more attention by dancing around it.
Yeah.
So I love that they played it out this way. I mean, and do I think the way they. I mean, they didn't really show a lot of context with how they did it, but I wasn't offended by it. Of course, you know.
I just love every time Charlie's on
screen,
though.
Oh, Sam is my favorite.
We had two moments today talking to them and then also smashing his face. Was that planned or was that something like, that he... Because you were in the meeting for that one.
Yeah, it's scripted that he, like, goes up to the glass.
By the way, does he do his own stunts, too?
He does all his own. He does his own, like, face smashing.
That's good. He's really good at it.
No, he's the best. I love every scene that he's in. He's hilarious.
So he's the sweetest man in real life.
And it's hysterical when he's swearing. What if we said motherfucker?
Oh my gosh.
What? It's like hearing my grandpa.
It's cute. It's cute, yeah.
That was last episode, right?
Yeah.
Where he had that whole... like slew of
things. Just about every episode
I think he swears and every episode he's either drinking or swearing.
That's what the alcohol does.
Drinking or swearing, that's all he's doing. That's great.
Well, again, like my grandpa. No.
It's like home. It's adorable when he does it.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so the episode starts out with Maggie in her interview with the lawyer, Rebecca Halliday.
Mm-hmm. Marcia Gay Harden. Great.
Yeah, fantastic actress. Mm-hmm. I love her.
Yeah, she's true.
Did you realize she won an Oscar?
Absolutely.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize that before.
She's amazing.
Before she was on our show.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. No, she's awesome. I love her. And I liked her in this episode. She was trying to lighten it up. It was a hard conversation she was having. Mm-hmm. She was trying to be funny. She's even swearing.
Spitfire Grill, was it? Did she win for Spitfire Grill?
I think so.
Sorry to interject. Anyway, move on.
I'll have to double check it.
Nominated for Mr.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Okay. Anyway,
I don't think so.
No, it might have been. We'll have to look it up and find out. Yeah. But we finally get a look at what happened in Africa, which was very, obviously very traumatic for Maggie, what we saw from the very first episode with her new look and everything. So we get into this storyline, and her interview is based on she's having to testify in this lawsuit because of an interview she did with Jerry regarding Genoa.
Right, and Stamtonovich or whatever.
Yes. So she and Jerry go and interview this other witness, and there's a question of something that he said. Mm-hmm. Either he said it happened on record or he didn't, and that's the debate.
Yeah.
Right.
And they are questioning her state of mind because of Africa.
Yeah, and whether or not her memory of it was accurate because of her state of mind because of Africa.
Right. And she was been prescribed, you know, medications, went to see a therapist, and so all of the aftermath that happened. But we find out that this interview that she did with this man was a good time after.
Yeah.
After the whole Africa situation, but she's still obviously not completely right.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, she, the fact that she keeps saying I'm fine again, this theme through consistent throughout the whole show, everybody that's screaming I'm this, are you?
He thinks
I don't
protest too much.
Exactly.
It really sounds like it hinges on Maggie's judgment and her frame of mind during that interview. I think it would work in their favor, right? If she wasn't in her frame of mind, they could just say she's a little bit nutso. So that's
that only explains why they went with it, but it doesn't explain why they didn't follow up and corroborate it.
Right.
That makes it even worse. So you relied on her knowing what she'd been through in Africa, and you relied on that?
So it just discredits everyone.
Yeah.
True.
So it makes it a little bit, you know, it might get them out of one thing, but then it just overall
a
whole other thing. But we get a look at what happened there, and once they get there, they go out to this orphanage to shoot some footage of soldiers building an addition onto this orphanage. And they talk about all the great things that they're doing there, but it's also a very dangerous area. There are people that, you know, go in and steal cattle with AK-47s.
Yeah. Cattle raiders.
That's insane.
Mm-hmm.
It's scary to think that we know this happens. We see it on the news, and it's nuts. And I think it has to be even worse when you actually go out there and see it.
Yeah.
And to see it from Maggie's point of view was interesting, I thought, because she's so innocent and she doesn't really get it. And she wanted this to be her first big story. And she did everything she could to get herself there and to have, you know, this horrible thing happen. And she... You know, the first thing we see, she goes into this the classroom, sees these kids learning geography, and she befriends this one little boy in the back by himself. Mm-hmm. And he's the one kid in the back all by himself, and you know him automatically. As soon as she goes to talk to him, that something's going to happen to this kid. Like, yeah. You can force, that's foreshadowing, yeah. Like, if I've ever seen it. Mm-hmm. But it's cute, her relationship with him. And she, you know, she really tries to get in there. And
she was reading that book. Was it Lyle the Crocodile? Is that what it was? The book that she kept reading to him? Yeah. And he kept saying again? Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Does anybody know
the story? I don't know the exact title, Lyle the Crocodile.
Okay, something like that.
Yeah. I don't know the story, and I was wondering if there was any subtext or metaphor to that story. Does anybody know it?
No.
Okay. I don't remember that story very well.
If you do, let us know.
Yes.
You know what really got me and what was so awakening is when Gary comes in with the camera and the kids, they think for a second that it's a AK-47 or a gun or whatever.
Something that's going to hurt them.
And they all duck for cover and they start screaming, and it's just, that's a reality. It's part of this nonfiction, you know, show, mm-hmm. but that's part of reality, is that, you know, people in other parts of the world are not so fortunate. And journalists who insert themselves, embed themselves into the situation, like Maggie and Gary chose to do, they really are soldiers themselves, you know, soldiers for uncovering truth, for trying to make a change. And that's why that scene was so powerful for me, because it shows a very serious part about the newsroom and the news world and what they do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I got chills. I thought I was going to cry for a second, but I didn't.
Well, it's one of those situations that until you're there, how do you really prepare for that? How is he going to know how to walk into that room right and not scare these kids? Yeah, like, how do you know?
Well, for me, that was the first foreshadowing of that unintended consequence. Mm-hmm. He didn't even know that by walking in there, that's going to create that kind of... Mm-hmm. And, of course, the greater unintended consequence, the fact that she... befriends this little boy, and then because of that,
right?
That kind of, well,
you know, and it comes there. They end up having to spend the night there. They hear gunshots in the middle of the night. They're trying to get the kids out, and poor Daniel, the little boy's name is Daniel. He's hiding under the bed and under her bed. And of course, he's under her bed because he's formed this bond with her.
Mm-hmm. And which was a little strange to me that he didn't get out when she was there. If he. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know he's scared and all of that, but mm-hmm. here's the person whose bed he's hiding mm-hmm. under, and obviously a protector in that sort of way, and he was not budging.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, a lot of times when you get that,
Well, I was thinking for a second, too, could he get out? Because she said it was only like 6 inches off the ground. She didn't know how he got in.
Yeah.
So maybe he couldn't get himself out, maybe, but then he did keep inching away from her.
Yeah, he was definitely pulling back.
I think he was just paralyzed.
Yeah, he was super scared.
Yeah. Sure, it got even scarier when everybody started leaving.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So. But one of the things is when she's reading the story to him and he's touching her hair.
Yeah.
And the pastor comes over and tells him, you know, he's never seen hair like yours before. You know, this color's called blonde, and it means nothing but trouble.
That's it. I can agree with. Oh, sorry.
You have
trouble on
our
couch today with Margaret.
Perfect. There's nothing wrong.
Yeah.
But it's just
he's married to a blonde.
Nothing but trouble.
Yeah. It just kind of shows where it was going to go. And
I mean, that line had nothing malicious with it, you know, before the tragedy happened. It was just like sort of a funny thing, like, oh, this guy probably has a thing for blondes, you know?
Yeah.
But then after what happened, that line is going to, there's a new meaning in her for it, because she thinks, oh, crap, you know, like, I was the person that got this kid killed because I was holding him up, and like, she's just constantly replaying it. She's obviously not.
And then we find out exactly why her hair changed to what it is now.
And I also like that, because before she left, she was talking to Mac, and she says, like, I just want to be the go-to person for something.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that now Africa, which is she wanted to be the go-to person for Africa, that's the last thing she wants to be even reminded of.
Mm-hmm.
But then the outward expression of that, which is that she doesn't want to see her own hair because of what that represents.
Yeah.
I just love all those things that are going on with Maggie. Very, very.
Well, she had such a rough time even before that. I mean, she broke up with Don.
Yeah.
She basically ruined her friendship with Lisa. Jim went all the way to a Romney bus to get away from.
Yeah.
So she's already a wreck. And then this happens, which would change anybody's life anyways.
Right. And I think already she feels like it was her fault for all of that was happening at home. And then she goes to Africa, and it's her fault that this kid gets killed. So she thinks to the point where she has to.
Yeah.
To cut all her hair off and change the color. But one of the things, too, is when she gets this kid out and she, as soon as she put him on her back, I knew something bad was going to happen. And we were talking about this after we watched the episode, that it was interesting to me that she put him on her back. Why would she put him on your back? To me, like, instinct would be you cover the child, you secure the child, not yourself. Like, you put yourself in harm's way versus the kid. And the fact that she did not think to do that, that wasn't her instinct. I wonder if that's going to come up at all in the rest of the season, if that's even going to be referenced.
I was just thinking that's a real quick way to get him out.
Yeah.
I can run faster if he's on my back. I mean, I agree. Mm-hmm. I think it's great that you thought of that, because I didn't think of that. But and then.
But I just, I don't know. I mean, I would think, you know, instead of on your back, cradle him to the front so you can,
have him hang on to you.
Sure.
But I just, and I mean, and I don't have kids, and I, but a lot of my friends have kids in my family, and so it's, we're constantly in situations where, you know, you have to watch out for kids, and that's just kind of a go-to thing. And I don't know if it's because I've always been around kids, and I think about it in that way, and maybe she doesn't, she's too young, doesn't have that instinctual way of thinking, or maybe I'm the only one who thinks that. I mean, I don't know. Like, you guys tell me, did anybody else feel weird about that she put the kid on her back?
Well, I just think
with shots being fired everywhere.
Yeah,
I mean,
maybe she was just thinking, what's the quickest way to get to the bus?
And I totally get that too.
But I'm glad you said that, because again, I didn't even think about that. But until you brought it up, I go, wow, that is interesting.
And especially because she says, you know, the bullet hit him in the back in his spine, which was a bullet that was, you know, meant for her, and you know, it hit him instead. And it, you know, to me, at least, you know, you always want it to be the other way around. You never want the child to go. You rather hurt before the child hurts. And I don't think that, you know, that she was thinking any other way. I just don't think she thought about it at all.
Yeah. And again, even in those moments, it would have to be definitely instinctual, because you can't, you don't have time to think.
Exactly. So it just wasn't like a first thought for her.
Should we talk about what you brought up?
What did I bring up?
Well, the whole thing about that, the
scene.
Her like little flash forward.
Her fantasy of what actually happened.
I wanted to make sure that cut made sense to you guys, because I mean I know what happened, but it was the first time that I, watching with you guys, was the first time that I saw the episode, and so there was that, you know, little fantasy montage almost
where we see her on the bus reading again,
and he's alive, and then you find out that he died, and we were talking about how it seemed like Gary got
shot. That's what I thought, because he fell to the ground, and then
they just talked about the camera, and they were asking for the camera, and you thought for sure Gary was going to get it,
and I didn't know how well that was going to play out, and I think they did a really good job of kind of leaving it a little bit more ambiguous, and we're not sure who got shot, because that was a lot that was all over the internet of like, are we about to lose Gary Cooper?
And that's what we thought. And I thought he was going to die on the bus. That maybe he got shot, got up, ran out, and then he was going to die on the bus,
and then realized he.
Because we talked predictions. I thought for sure something was going to happen to Gary, just because Maggie did such a drastic change that it had. I thought, you know, oh, this guy wasn't sure if they should go at the very end, and then they ended up going anyways, and he was going to be the one that was hurt, because we don't know anything about, we haven't heard his name yet in the future one, and then John actually called it something.
For me, it was very, you know, you go to an orphanage, your kid's going to get hurt.
There's a reason that they hired that many kids, and something has to happen to one of them.
I did get confused, to be honest, for a second, though, thinking, wait, so was he just shot on the bus while he was being read to? Like, but then you find out, no, and it was kind of the fantasy
of what she wanted to happen versus what actually happened. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it was heartbreaking and, you know, hard to watch, and definitely, you know, now we understand more about her character and what she's going through now. But we also find out that she was, you know, she went to see a psychiatrist, you know, the whole nine, but she's not taking the medicine.
Going against medical advice, because she's got more training than the psychiatrist, I'm sure.
She knows better. Oh, Maggie's always know better. Margaret's always know better.
But it's also interesting, because
blonde ones.
In the blonde first Margaret. Season, she also was taking, you know, anti-anxiety medication. Mm-hmm. So this has to be Right. You know, obviously a lot worse, and she definitely needs something stronger, and she's choosing not to take it. But that just doesn't make...
What I also thought was so interesting is when she goes, she's so anxious to go to Africa that she takes the, what was it, Klonopin? No, what was it? Whatever the heck the drug was, that she takes the wrong one.
Yeah.
But takes it before, you know, she's so anxious. She'll take that one. She comes back and gets medical advice. Mm-hmm. She doesn't take this one, so that's how much she's flipped.
Oh, yeah. Right. She's definitely a different person, and I think we're going to see her a lot of changes in her character if they show more of her in the present.
So heartbreaking.
No, it is. It's
you guys, I have to tell you, just as a little comedic relief about how they hired those kids. Our casting director, Nancy Perkins, had to interview all the kids to decide who was going to be Daniel and who was going to be in the scene and everything. And she just has, I feel like casting directors in this town have the best stories. Like, I've heard things about people coming in with guns and people doing anything. But kids are so awesome. And these kids would come in and she'd be like, okay, so play with my hair and just tell me that, you know, say something about how you've never seen blonde hair before and kind of going on. And there was a kid who was like, I don't want to. And she was like, come on, just, you know, you're here, so let's just pretend, touch my blonde hair and pretend you've never seen it before. No. She's like, can I just be a bird instead? And then there was a kid who was like, okay, do you want the accent or no accent? Like, some kids are super professional, some kids
comes
are...
comes in with shades on.
Yeah, exactly.
That's so funny. Cute. That's so cute.
I love
she
it.
Has, I mean,
so did they get the bird get hired? Is she...
So Daniel was the bird.
Oh, really?
No. Oh. I'm making that up.
I was like, wow, they took a risk there.
Nothing but trouble. Funny.
Well, let's talk more about you and being part of the show. And we had somebody actually tweet us a question that wanted to know about your time with MSNBC.
Oh, yeah. Yes. So I graduated from University of Illinois with a degree in broadcast journalism. And from there, I was a page at NBC. So if you watch 30 Rock, Kenneth the Page is what I did. I gave tours at NBC. And then I got hired on MSNBC with Keith Olbermann. So I was his research assistant for about a year and a half until... Jeez. Aaron Sorkin came in because he was thinking about writing a show about the behind the scenes of a newsroom. Mm. And the first title, it was actually More as the Story Develops, fun fact. I wasn't called The Newsroom. So he came into our newsroom and just because I was close with Keith and he knew Keith because he shadowed Keith's team when he did Sports Night. So he knew Keith from that, so then he stayed in touch and he came and shadowed our team and I stayed in touch with Aaron and he had just a bunch of questions like in the pilot, you know how they're going back and forth on iNews and they're talking about the different alerts and the colors and everything. So I would explain how our different programs work and things like that. So I ended up, he asked me to be a consultant because I had been a consultant for the pilot. He asked me to be a consultant for the show. And then I finally got the pilot script, and I absolutely fell in love with it, and I just felt like I really needed...
To give him notes?
Well, I did give him notes, but then I, read the actual thing. He had already asked me for that. And
you don't have to change your name if you ended up being Maggie.
Margaret. Exactly. Yeah. And I felt pretty inspired by that. I was like, oh, wow, this name is very similar to mine.
I know. I was like, I'm afraid I'm going to say Margaret Jordan.
Oh, that's happened on set before.
Really?
Yeah. What episode is it? It might be it's the pilot. At the very end, Will goes... He finally remembers her name and is like, your name is Margaret Jordan. And it was really late. It was probably at the end of the week when we were shooting it. And Aaron was explaining to Jeff how he wanted him to do it. So he walks through the newsroom and is like, your name is Margaret Judson. No! Totally messed it up. So yeah, that happens. And he's like, in retrospect, I wish I had not named this character because now it's confusing. I never expected you to actually audition for the show and now you're here and now it's confusing. So that was kind of inspiration for it, but I had never acted before. But it was just something that was so close to me and I knew that story very well and I wanted to be a part of it. So I ended up auditioning for it and for Margaret Jordan, which, of course, I didn't get. Allison Pill got, which is better. I mean, she's an amazing actor. And so, yeah, so I play Tess Watson. So, yeah, it started from being at MSNBC, and at NBC I started the page and then was a research assistant to Keith. And I actually worked on the Ed show for a while, and I was his first primetime blogger when he started in primetime.
I read in an interview that actually the first time you asked Aaron to audition, he gave you an answer that you didn't like, right?
He said no, which actually just made it better because I knew that this was legit. Like, it wasn't somebody just like, oh, yeah. It was like, I said, you know, can I audition for this? I absolutely love it. And he said, no, it doesn't work that way. Just because you're in a real newsroom doesn't mean that you can play one on TV. Mm-hmm. And that was a completely satisfactory answer to me. And months later, when casting happened and when it was in production, he contacted me and was like, you've helped me so much with the pilot and you've only asked me for one thing. And I feel like the least I can do is let you have that one thing. But still, don't expect anything because this is not how it works. And then, yeah, it went well. And so I got to be Tess Weston.
That's amazing.
For two seasons.
Wow.
That months later, he called back and remembered that you asked that.
He's amazing. He really is.
That's very cool.
And for him to initiate that, I mean, I would have completely been satisfied with the no answer. But then for him to come back and initiate, I just think really speaks to, like, how much of a stand-up guy he is. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I had the fortunate luck of actually meeting him not that long ago at a party, and he was just so nice, and I was overhearing a conversation he was having with two other people, and I just listening to the way he talks, and they were kind of saying some like ridiculous things about stuff.
What were they saying
funny stuff about writing these weird characters, like stuff that are so not his style of writing, and just like
giving pitches.
It was kind of a funny thing, but he was so gracious about it and just such a stand-up person, and that just, you know, and after hearing that story, it's nice to see people in like in a social element that way and just really be nice people.
Yeah.
It's just awesome.
Yeah. I actually haven't had any really bad experiences with meeting somebody, but like a celebrity. But yeah, you know, you hear the stories about how people just like are so unappreciative of fans. And I know he really is appreciative of people who are interested in his work, which is nice.
Yeah, no, and he's been like really, really nice. And hopefully we can get him to come on and hang out with us.
Yeah.
it sounds like that's a really great story.
Thanks.
It's just so fun for you. So what's next for you?
Crazy.
Like, what else? Like, are you guys done shooting for the...
Yeah, so now we finished shooting, and we're waiting to see if it gets picked up for a third season. So hopefully that happens. I think now, from what I understand, it's mostly a scheduling issue, but you never know, you know, how that's going to go. So fingers crossed.
Yeah, I can't imagine HBO wouldn't have them for season 3.
Yeah, so we'll see.
So is there anything fun you can tell us for upcoming episodes?
Spoiler alerts
we can get? Anything you won't get in trouble
or
for
inside
saying?
Info? Oh,
you guys are putting me on the spot. Are you trying to get me in trouble?
How about we'll go with this?
Does Maggie change her hair color back?
I feel like she was almost about to.
Does Hallie sleep with Jim?
Sure did.
Well, she just said she was a rebound.
I think we all want to know.
They did again. What is this?
I thought this was going to be an easy question she would answer.
What are we lobbying softball? She's used in hard news.
That's terrible.
I think Kristen has an important question.
I know a lot of people have asked you this, but we want to see more tests.
Me
You're
too.
Now. Yeah. Hilarious. They give you the best one-liners.
I agree. I'm really appreciative to Aaron. I mean, that's a complete testament to Aaron's writing, but I feel really lucky that he gives me some good stuff. And in the last few episodes, there's a little more Tess. I know there wasn't very much. They had to get to a lot in this episode.
That's a good tease. I like that. More Tess.
More Tess.
More
Tess.
Well, hashtag more Tess.
Yes, we're going to do that. Thank you so much for hanging out with us.
Thanks
we love
so
to have you. You are welcome anytime.
Fun.
Make sure to come back and visit us soon.
I'd love to.
Where can people find you? Where can they follow you?
So
keep updating with you?
Margaret Judson, MargaretJudson. And tweet at me and I'll tweet back.
Awesome.
Yay.
Well, thank you guys for hanging out with us. That is out of time. But make sure to check us back out next week and go to iTunes, YouTube, leave us comments, rate and download. We really appreciate it. And make sure to follow us at AfterBuzz TV. And you can follow me at Kelly with an IE 079.
You can follow me at Kristen Carroll 13.
You can follow me at Sarah with an H Mendoza.
Yeah, you can't follow me anywhere, but you can see me at SarahBuddies.com.
You can download on iTunes.
Yes.
There you go.
Yes. See you guys next week.
Okay.
From Bing.com, executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
We want more tests!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.